Something incredible is happening right now during the war in Ukraine. More than 12 years after Russia first invaded and seized control over the Crimean Peninsula, Moscow's grip over the territory is finally beginning to slip. Near the end of May, the Ukrainian armed forces announced that they were adopting a new strategy towards the Russian occupation in Crimea that they called a logistics lockdown. Unable to take Crimea back with troops on the ground, they were going to use their new mid-range explosive drones to systematically target Russia's logistics, warehouses, equipment, infrastructure, and supply routes going in and out of Crimea at operational depth instead. In effect, this new Ukrainian strategy aimed to transform Crimea's geography from a Russian strength into a Russian weakness by isolating it as much as possible from the rest of Russia and Russian-occupied territory. In June, Ukraine's defense minister, Mykhailo Fedorov, claimed during an interview on YouTube that this new strategy aimed to effectively transform Crimea into an island, which, if successful, would have devastating consequences for both the Russian military operating on the front lines and for Russian society at large. And so far, this new Ukrainian strategy has proven to be extremely successful. You see, the Crimean Peninsula is, geographically speaking, already almost an island naturally. It is only tenuously connected to the rest of the European continent in the north through land by the extremely narrow Isthmus of Perekop, which only ranges between 5 and 7 kilometers wide. Other than this one natural connection, the rest of Crimea is separated from southern Ukraine by the Sivash, or the Rodden Sea, a complex labyrinth of shallow lagoons, salt marshes, and wetlands that are incredibly difficult to traverse over. Other than the Isthmus of Perekop, there are basically only two other places across the Sivash that are both wide and firm enough to actually handle roads and railways, meaning that there are really only three narrow logistical corridors between southern Ukraine and Crimea that land-based logistics can travel across at scale, through the Isthmus of Perekop in the west, through Chongar in the center, and across the Arabet Spit in the east. After Russia seized control over Crimea in early 2014, this geography posed a serious challenge for the Kremlin to deal with since there was no connection to it by land to the rest of Russia. Russia sort of solved this problem by building a $4 billion bridge to Crimea from Krasnodar Krai across the Kerch Strait, which features a highway that was finished in 2018 and a railway that was finished near the end of 2019. But it still wasn't enough to fully logistically support Crimea's population of more than 2.5 million people and Russia's expanding military presence on the peninsula. Russia spent billions of more dollars heavily militarizing Crimea after the 2014 conquest with new military bases, radar stations, airfields, naval infrastructure, and garrisons that all enabled the Russian military to have a large base of operations to invade and attack southern Ukraine from during the 2022 invasion. Well, since then, Crimea has also given the Russians a rear base to support their military operations all along the southern front from. One of Russia's principal objectives for having invaded Ukraine again in 2022 was establishing a direct land corridor to Crimea across southern Ukraine through the Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson oblasts in order to make Crimea less of a logistical island for them and to solidify their control over it. Now, since the invasion, the principal methods that the Russians have used to reinforce Crimea with supplies and troops have been through this web of roads and rail lines through the occupied land bridge in southern Ukraine, through the $4 billion Crimean bridge that they built across the Kerch Strait, and through ferries and maritime-based logistics. And all of these connections have begun being relentlessly and routinely attacked by the Ukrainians recently. Before the start of the current strategy to cut Crimea off from the rest of Russia, the Ukrainians repeatedly attacked the bridge across the Kerch Strait first, but with only limited successes. A truck bomb the Ukrainians blew up on the highway part of the bridge in October of 2022 knocked out two sections of it and resulted in months' worth of repairs. Road traffic across the bridge was severely disrupted by the attack for months, but rail traffic continued relatively quickly afterward. In July of 2023, Ukrainian naval drones attacked the bridge again overnight, collapsing one of its sections in the process. But, like the first attack, while it managed to disrupt road traffic across the bridge for months, rail traffic was minimally affected and was restored again within hours. Then, in June of 2025, the Ukrainians reported that they had secretly planted and detonated explosives beneath the bridge along several of its underwater support structures. But the damage inflicted was minimal and only resulted in the halt of traffic on the bridge for a few hours. The bridge has more or less remained open to both vehicle and rail traffic ever since then, but the repeated Ukrainian attacks on it did force the Russians into restricting the bridge's use. After the 2022 truck bomb attack, the Russian authorities introduced a ban on any trucks carrying a payload of more than 1.5 tons and most commercial vans from utilizing it in order to prevent another similar attack, and also reduced their reliance on large fuel shipments by rail across the bridge to eliminate the presence of potentially flammable materials on it. It's still being used as a logistics corridor by the Russians in Crimea, but the bulk of Russia's heavy freight routes were transferred towards the web of roads and railways across the land bridge that occupied southern Ukraine and onboard ferries instead, with air-based logistics effectively having been shut down since the start of the war due to both sides' advanced anti-air systems. And as Ukraine's drone technology and innovation continued advancing with the help of Starlink and US-made AI-powered Hornet drones, their increasingly capable fleet of mid- and long-range drones eventually enabled them to begin reliably and consistently attacking all of these alternative supply routes into Crimea as well. Since April of this year, the Ukrainians have launched hundreds of mid-range drone attacks against Russian trucks carrying fuel, ammunition, and supplies all along the strategically critical R-280 highway that connects the Russian mainland to Crimea through the occupied cities of Mariupol, Melitopol, and Chongar onwards towards the major Crimean cities of Simferopol and Sevastopol. And besides for targeting Russian trucks and railways themselves, the drones have been dropping numerous small landmines all along the highway that weigh only 500 grams that have magnetic or motion sensors that are blowing up additional trucks later. The Russian occupation authorities like to call this highway the Novorossiya Highway, but lately, the Ukrainians have increasingly begun referring to it as the Highway of Death instead. By June, Ukraine's 3rd Special Battalion claimed to have taken full aerial control over the stretch of the highway between Melitopol and Chongar, accompanied by videos of dozens of exploding and burning Russian trucks that they had taken out with their drones. The bridge itself from Chongar leading into Crimea was struck by Ukrainian drones at least 3 separate times in June alone, critically damaging it and forcing the Russians to switch traffic across a pontoon bridge nearby instead. Then, around 50 of Russia's trucks carrying fuel and ammunition that were diverted away from Chongar through the Perekop Isthmus were then further struck by Ukrainian drones on the 11th of June as they were attempting to cross through Ardiansk. All in all, since this new Ukrainian mid-range drone campaign began ramping up in May, Ukrainian drone strikes have managed to hit virtually all of the land-based entrance points into the Crimean Peninsula. From the bridges over the North Crimean Canal in the northwest that lead over the Isthmus of Perekop, to the Chongar Bridge in the center, to the Henichensk Bridge in the east that leads into the Arabet Spit, and all across the R-280 Highway of Death stretching all the way to Melitopol. The result is that by mid-June, the Ukrainian 414th Unmanned Strike Aviation Brigade reported that Russia's military cargo traffic along the R-280 had crashed by an astonishing 71% over a period of just 2 weeks. Satellite images have also captured the scale of the damage on these bridges that the Ukrainian drones have inflicted, such as this image captured over the Chongar Bridge in central Crimea from mid-June. This image captured over the Henichesk Bridge, leading into the Arabet Spit from late June, and this image captured over the Stavki Bridge that runs over the Crimean Canal, leading into the Isthmus of Perekop. And these have been far from the only logistical targets that the Ukrainians have begun targeting around Crimea recently. Around the Kerch Strait between Russia's Krasnodar Krai and occupied Crimea, Ukrainian drone operations have targeted oil depots on either side of the strait in Kerch and Kavkaz that Russia has historically relied upon to supply Crimea and the whole southern front with fuel. While on the 21st of June, Ukrainian drones managed to hit 3 out of the 5 Russian vehicle ferries that travel across the strait that were set ablaze as well, effectively shutting down Russia's ferry service between the mainland and Crimea in the process and severing yet another one of Russia's vital supply arteries. And satellite images once again managed to capture the scale of Ukraine's recent drone attacks here, too. In this image, taken over the Crimean side of the Kerch Strait from the 22nd of June, you can see thick, billowing smoke from the burning oil storage tanks in Kerch that were struck by Ukrainian drones, while you can see white smoke emanating out from the Crimean Bridge itself, which is a new defense mechanism that the Russians have developed to try and obscure the bridge from drone attacks. Smoke-generating vehicles will drive out onto the bridge during drone attacks and start blowing smoke to try and hide the bridge, as seen more clearly by this image where you can actually see the smoke-blowing vehicles on the bridge doing their thing. Fuel storage depots and power lines across Crimea itself have also been repeatedly targeted, and the end result of all of this is that Crimea is not only increasingly running out of fuel and supplies, but it's also running out of possible supply routes to get more fuel and supplies in. especially with the tight restrictions on trucks and fuel that are still in place along the Crimean Bridge, too. Crimea is indeed getting steadily transformed by the Ukrainians into an island surrounded by war and fire. And it is already beginning to have devastating consequences for the Russian military and government. With fewer and fewer supply routes into Crimea being reliably open, and with more storage sites getting struck, the availability of fuel in the peninsula is becoming increasingly scarce. Gasoline began being rationed in Crimea by mid-May that led to miles-long lineups at gas stations, which led to Russian tourists visiting Crimea from the mainland bringing their own gas and jerry cans with them. One of these tourists reported to the Washington Post in mid-June that they witnessed queues at gas stations in Crimea reaching more than 8 hours long. And then, shortly afterwards, in late June, the Russian occupation authorities in Crimea took the most drastic step yet by temporarily banning all fuel sales for civilians in the peninsula entirely, reserving anything left exclusively for the military and essential services. The biggest sign yet of just how dire the fuel crisis in Crimea has gotten. And the day after that announcement was made, even further restrictions on civilian life in Crimea came into force. The Russian-installed governor of Sevastopol, the largest city in Crimea, home to more than 500,000 people, announced multiple new, supposedly temporary restrictions in light of this difficult situation, including the closure of all public transportation after 10 p.m., the closure of all large shops and cafes after 8 p.m., and even the shutdown of streetlights in order to conserve energy. Residents have even been urged by the authorities to turn off their air conditioners despite temperatures in Sevastopol reaching nearly 30 degrees Celsius or 86 Fahrenheit. Energy blackouts across Crimea have become increasingly frequent that are also disrupting water supplies that rely on electrical pumps, while the occupation government even just banned the use of riding mopeds and motorbikes at night due to their noise supposedly hindering defenses against Ukrainian drones. All sporting events, summer camps, competitions, and training sessions for children throughout Crimea were also canceled by the occupation authorities, supposedly due to security concerns, but really because of the lack of fuel, at least through the 1st of September as well. And worst of all for the occupation authorities in Crimea, all of this is taking place exactly when Crimea usually experiences its peak tourism season. Every summer since the Russians conquered and annexed Crimea in 2014, millions of Russian tourists from elsewhere in the country have visited the peninsula every summer for its warm weather, beautiful beaches, and famous summer camps that date back to the Soviet era. The escalation of the war in 2022 caused a slight decrease in the number of summertime tourists visiting since nobody could visit Crimea by air any longer, but until recently, the war was generally kept far enough away from Crimea, and nearly 4 million summertime tourists still visited Crimea just last year in 2025, which was nearly as high as the pre-war and pre-COVID level tourist visits were. And most of them all came in their cars along the Crimean Bridge across the Kerch Strait. With all of this chaos going on in Crimea right now, however, the summer 2026 tourism season is quickly shaping up to be a catastrophe. In June, Russian tourist associations reported a 50% drop in tourist bookings in Crimea compared with the month before in May, while bookings in July and August are already down by more than 30% compared to a year ago, which will inevitably cripple the crucial summer holiday economic activity in Crimea that the local occupation government and residents always rely on. On the 26th of June, when the occupation authorities in Crimea formally declared a state of emergency across the peninsula, thousands of cars packed with tourists and residents attempting to all flee at once triggered a massive 15-kilometer-long traffic jam on the Crimean side of the Kerch Strait Bridge leading back to the Russian mainland. One of the most visible attempts at a mass exodus out of Crimea yet seen during the whole war. The consequences of the logistical lockdown that's now plaguing Crimea is also affecting the Russian military's operations further to the north along the front line as well. The Crimean Peninsula, with all of its storage sites, depots, arsenals, airfields, and military bases, along with its proximity to the Russian mainland, has been able to support the Russian army's offensives in southern Ukraine for years now. But with the peninsula becoming increasingly locked down by Ukraine's methodical drone campaign, more and more of Russia's supply routes will have to be shifted away to the more vulnerable and exposed land bridge in the north instead. This is critical because stretching a truck supply route even by an additional 80 to 100 kilometers will reduce the volume of supplies that a truck can transport by 30% a day, which directly results in the Russian military being able to mount fewer and fewer assaults along the front. The longer that Crimea is locked down from a logistical perspective, the weaker that Russia's military operations in the occupied regions of Kherson and Zaporizhia will become. Even Crimea's ability to serve as an airbase is also becoming increasingly degraded, as storage sites and launchers on the peninsula are increasingly becoming able to be targeted by Ukraine's drones. It's even been reported that Russia's mobile air defense teams in Crimea tasked with shooting down the drones are also having to ration their fuel, which is reducing their ability to stop the attacks from getting even worse. And all of this is increasingly becoming a disaster of legitimacy for Vladimir Putin. The way that Russia was able to seize control over Crimea virtually without any bloodshed in 2014 was widely viewed as Putin's greatest geopolitical triumph in Russia. It became the keystone symbol of Russia's resurgence to great power or even superpower status in the 21st century, and it provided Putin with a great deal of his mandate to rule and popularity with the Russian people. Now, however, with Russia's grip on Crimea proving to be increasingly tenuous, Ukraine is applying tremendous amounts of pressure on Putin. If Ukraine manages to make Russia's control over Crimea unviable, and regular civilian life on the peninsula difficult or even impossible, then the Ukrainians will gain major leverage in any future negotiations on ending the war with the Kremlin. Crimea is almost certainly not returning back to Ukrainian control again anytime soon, and the Ukrainian military is still a long way from being able to mount a successful attack to retake it by force. But apparently instead, the Ukrainians can actually keep making both life and military operations in Crimea increasingly unviable through this new mid-range drone campaign that is systematically destroying all of Russia's supply routes into and out of the peninsula. And so far, the Russians haven't been able to figure out a successful enough countermeasure. If the situation continues, pressure would build on Putin to escalate or negotiate, or risk a humiliating mass population exodus from Crimea like it seemed was taking place near the end of June when the state of emergency was declared, and there was that 15-kilometer-long traffic jam leading to the only bridge out. And if there isn't a ceasefire, then the pressure on Putin will just keep on building and building as this once great symbol of Russia's restored imperial power continues withering away under the mass of Ukraine's relentless drone attacks. For now, Crimea indeed appears to have been transformed by the Ukrainians into an island surrounded by war and fire. Ultimately, though, figuring out and solving the geopolitical crisis in Ukraine will likely be as difficult going forward as it's already been for more than a decade since Russian troops first marched across the border and seized Crimea in 2014. But something that is very much figured out, on the other hand, is what you should watch next, or at least put on your list. And that's the China that Xi grew up in, a grand theory of Xi Jinping, which is a Nebula exclusive, which means that it exists only on the streaming service that myself and a whole bunch of other creators put together called Nebula. Created by my friend Polymatter, this documentary explores the dramatic rise to power of Xi Jinping. From sleeping on the floor of a cave to leading one of the two global superpowers of the 21st century, it's an incredible story that's well worth your time and will help you understand even more about the modern world we live in. Then there were also my own projects on Nebula like Mad Kings, a show that explores the darker histories of some of modern history's most well-known dictators, including other recent historical figures who have clashed with the Western world like Libya's Muammar Gaddafi and Iraq's Uday Hussein, along with episodes covering the reigns of North Korea's Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il that explore how they were actually able to avoid a US intervention. And then there's also my other Nebula series called Modern Conflicts, which explores modern wars, battles, and conflicts in a level of depth and detail that would never work out on YouTube without triggering this site's demonetization and age restriction policies. With episodes you can watch covering the Israel-Palestinian conflict, Hamas's attack on Israel on October 7th, the overthrow of the Assad regime in Syria, and Israel's invasion of the Gaza Strip that explain the crucial backstory information you need to understand what's currently happening in the Middle East right now. These are my own projects, but there's also just so much good stuff on Nebula from other creators right now that you can watch too. There's Day Pass, hosted by Jason from Not Just Bikes, that explores the world through the lens of public transportation down on the ground. If you ever wondered whatever happened to Lindsay Ellis, she's been making her usual documentaries on Nebula for years now instead of YouTube. There's Patrick Willem's latest short film, The Dinner Plan, featuring big names like Griffin Newman and Zach Cherry. There's Abolish Everything, our new comedy debate premise recorded live in New York. Scav, a docuseries produced by the Wendover Productions and Jetlag folks tracing the incredible drama and unfoldings of the world's largest annual scavenger hunt hosted at the University of Chicago, and Oldest and Newest Places by Joe Scott. A full-length documentary exploring the oldest and newest rocks on the planet and what it takes to actually visit them. I could honestly keep going and going, but just believe me when I say that with every month that goes by, the Nebula catalog keeps getting deeper, making becoming a subscriber even better. But we also need you to keep this whole cycle going. We have a great deal running right now that when you use my link at nebula.tv/reallifelore, or by scanning the QR code here on your screen, or by clicking the button, you'll get a whole 50% off of an annual Nebula subscription, which will bring the cost for you down to just $30 for the entire year or $250 a month, a small fraction of the price of other streaming services. As other streamers keep raising their prices, this is an awesome deal, and if you want to sign up for a lifetime subscription to Nebula and never deal with a monthly subscription ever again, you can also get one for 40% off right now for $300 as well. So give us a shot, and thank you so much for supporting not only my own channel, but all of the other creators who are building Nebula with their own awesome content as well. And as always, thank you so much for watching.